Welcome back to Tip TV Finance, where I am joined by my co-host, Mike Ingram, strategist at BGC Partners, and by our very special guest, Sean Richards from Not a Yes Man Economics. How are you today, Sean?
Good, thank you.
This should be, these are happy days for all of us. Mr. Carney remains, and, you know, the world is a better place.
Do you think so? I'd say that the first is technically true. By the way, I haven't forgotten, for those that are viewing this, that it looks like you're going to owe Mike and I a beer on this particular subject.
Well, however, he's gone by the end of the year.
There's your fear.
Well, it's doubt.
Because he could yet go.
I'm from Glasgow. It's always in doubt.
returning to the issue.
I think he's going to go.
I think there's a lot here that's very, very dubious. For example, the media view is that he's had a victory. I'm much less clear about that. This is like a footballer who gets a one-year contract extension but actually wants 5 years. Chelsea fans like me know this. Once players pass 30, Roman Abramovich does this sort of thing. They don't get what they want. They get what they're given to hopefully keep them on a sort of shorter lead, if you like. Mm. And I think this is what, contrary to what people might have read all around the media, is what's happened here. So the 2 years he'll want, the government think they've got some sort of a grip on Carney now. He can also come round and present it as a victory. If we were watching an episode of Yes Minister,
yes,
this would be ideal.
Yes, we are.
But remember, in Yes Minister, the governor of the Bank of England, it was said that if he was honest and intelligent, that would be an innovation.
But isn't part of the problem is we'll never know what the truth is? And the fact is we've built people such as Carney, Mario Draghi, well, maybe Janet Yellen, into these sort of rock stars, and central banking is still pretty much the only game in town, that we can't afford to say, well, the emperor has no clothes, none of this works, you're all making it up, and it's more presentation as opposed to substance, particularly somebody in Theresa May's position where, you know, economic outlook is perhaps looking a little bit fragile.
No, I agree. There is, of course, an element of that, is that they're stuck in the game they've been playing since 2008, 2009, and it's increasingly difficult for people to reverse course. In fact, wherever you look, this is now quite difficult, isn't it? If we look at the UK, various debt numbers we have, then the problem is if interest rates do go back up very quickly, that would become a problem. And something subject I was looking at today on my blog, France, with the debt numbers there, ditto. Mm. ECB is oiling the wheels to some extent because French bond yields are so low, 10-year a bit below even 0.5%. Should that go higher, that had become unaffordable. But the other side of that is that it's a trap and we're advancing deeper into the trap.
I mean, how far are we from the end game now? Because it seemed to me, you know, from the statements from Governor Kuroda at the BOG earlier on this week, that they clearly have run out of ideas, and in fact it's only a matter of time until they perhaps start tapering. Is that where the rest of the sort of central banking community is going, and are we going to see the sort of bond sell-off that we've seen in recent months continue on the back of it?
I'd be careful about that. It's not entirely clear to me the Bank of Japan ever had any ideas, frankly. So
well,
I'm not saying they could run out of them, but they've run around. They've bought loads of stuff. Remember, they are still buying away. The area that's most difficult for them is where they buy equities. They buy them via exchange-traded funds. Now, they must be getting towards three-quarters of the ETF market in Japan. There was a Bloomberg report, when was that, earlier this year, saying they were around about 60%. I looked at the numbers and stuff. They try and hide them. It looked like then they were at two-thirds. Must be at 70%. So that's the area, actually, ironically, where time is running out.
Well, functionally, it's not a market.
Is that the reason why we had guests on this program who said, I think the Japanese stock market's very cheap. It's the best stock market to buy into. Are they just saying it because they know there's a safety net of the Bank of Japan behind it?
There's some element.
You can't lose.
But it is also true, you know, it depends in all these things where you start from, isn't it? It nearly made 40,000 back in the day in the early 90s. Mm. And compared to that, less than half. Even in the period of the lost decades, there has been economic growth in Japan and changes. Not a lot, but some. And so then you could say that that's cheap. Of course, you've then got to be very careful. It's a bit like the UK housing market, where you start from.
But in terms of actually hitting their target, which is the inflation target, I mean, other than, you know, the devaluation-induced surge that they enjoyed in 2013-14, inflation's back to where it was before Abenomics even started.
Well, I think you've got to be careful with this sort of thing again.
Yeah.
Having worked out there, you see, the Japanese are not like us. This has been one of my arguments all through this episode. They tend to risk it. For example, you can still have 100 yen machines in Japan and you can still get your various drinks out of that. Now, in spite of all the changes, That's been incredibly resistant. Here it would be a 200 yen one or 300 yen one. It would have gone long ago in similar circumstances. So in various areas they resist it. Then you come to the next bit is where they're trying to enforce inflation on Japan. And then, but then of course they then hit the what should have been fantastic for them, which is the lower oil price. They're the biggest energy importer, sort of per head around. So they've got themselves into a...
They just went into savings.
They've got themselves into a complete mess.
Yeah.
The thing that should have been a big gain for them, the oil price fall, is exactly the opposite of what they're trying to do. They couldn't be in a bigger mess in the establishment terms, I think.
Right, just finally, I just want to talk about the elephant in the room, the Clinton-Trump debacle. Is there any economic difference? Well, the economic difference between Clinton and Obama is supposed to be zero, or very near to zero. Is that correct?
As far as you can see, but I suspect there would be a difference when it comes through, because both, I'd steer clear of the political side, but I'd say both candidates, because this is, whichever way you look at it, looks like it's going to be quite a tight election, both will be promising and then will be likely to give away, won't they? And also, fiscal policy is enormously in fashion. I don't mean amongst the ordinary person, but around the establishment, basically because they've tried everything else. So I think it's likely that whoever we get, that'll be more expansionary. The Federal Reserve, however, is quite awkward. For example, in the Trump victory, the member of the Federal Reserve that declared they were Clinton supporters might be a bit awkward. And in a way, it's also awkward if Hillary wins, because, you know, then to come back and then argue you're independent, not that I think that they are, but some people try and argue that, it's a bit harder, isn't it?
Sean Richards from Not a Yes Man Economics. We shall see what happens next week, and we will be back after the break.